Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So this is your Blue Room Deadline Day special. After numerous hitches on YouTube, we're finally up and running. And Dave Downey does join me now. Dave, how are you, mate, on this fine deadline day evening?
I'm okay, Matt. For anybody listening to this, and this goes against probably a lot of people who like YouTube and stuff like that, it's the exact reason why, career-wise, I've never really gone near YouTube, other than when we've done bits and pieces like this. The exact reason why is what has just literally happened in the last 10 minutes, Matt, where your laptop has decided not to play any ball, and we've had to wait a few minutes, and no doubt people will be running around complaining and wondering if there's something wrong with their computer, so we have to apologise to them.
I accidentally started the stream before when I was sat on my couch watching the end of United, so people might have just got a view of me from an unflattering angle shouting at Leicester for doing something mad, I imagine. So yeah, not the best start, but we're up here and up and running now.
No, but I don't know. I suppose it's better for some people, isn't it? When they see, I think we class ourselves as professional journalists and broadcasters, but when it comes to when people can actually see who we are, hence the reason why you can't see me right now, is a completely different game, isn't it? So I think the first thing to say is probably fair play to Les Roberts, who does all of our YouTube stuff, well, the majority of our YouTube stuff, and Rob Veer, who's obviously going to join us shortly. And a few of the others who are going to join us at some point throughout the next hour and a bit to discuss what's going on with Everton and transfer windows and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, I think as the day's gone and been, I think as it's got closer and closer to this deadline, which is, how long is it exactly, Matt? About an hour and 5 minutes or something like that?
Yeah, an hour and 3 minutes we've got, yeah, to the shot.
Excuse me, an hour and 3 minutes, and we're still sitting here as Evertonians, crossing our fingers that, at least one more comes in, which is probably going to be James Garner from Manchester United. That looks like, let's hope anyway, we're not jinxing it, but let's hope that's been done and dusted, and we're just waiting for the club to eventually announce that. Might well be at 10 o'clock on the dot. They like to do these things at a specific time, don't they, Matt? Like they did with Jessica Garnagay earlier today at, 4 o'clock on the dot, wasn't it?
4:45, I think it was,
4:45,
yeah.
There you go. So, people who are specific with time and whatnot, and I suppose you think I was that type of person because I work in radio, would love all of that sort of thing. But let's hope in the next hour and, 2 minutes now, that Everton pulls something else out the hat, because I still think we're quite short of what we need to go into the, at least the next 3 months of the campaign.
Yeah, like I said, there will be a lot of people joining us throughout the course of the night to go through that. Might have a few pets as well. My dog's just coming in, and I'm obviously very keen to get involved in the transfer excitement. But, I imagine Dave, there's going to be a lot of talk tonight about what Everton haven't got through the door in regards to a centre-forward and, attack and reinforcements and why we might be a little bit light there. But be interested to get your thoughts on the lad that has come in and the lad that looks like he's probably going to come in Idrissa Gana Gueye and then James Garner from Manchester United. But Idrissa Gueye, I think it's one of them that's sort of, you know, Stanley Donald summer, hasn't it? I think we've all sort of seen updates every now and then and thought, you know, it's more of the same here and there. Not quite getting excited about it because it's dragged on so long. But now he's here, he's through the door. It took to the final day of the deadline to do it. But I think the fact that various reports saying it's a £2 million fee, and the lad himself seems absolutely made up to be back here and seems very sincere about his happiness and love for the football club. From a purely playing perspective, I think it's a sensible move, isn't it? And someone who will come into that midfield and probably be a standout player straight away.
Yeah, he will. I think it's something that these are things that I don't think that the club hold themselves in any real a claim for how they've acted, how they've basically done their business this summer. Because if you, and this is a lot of debate that many people have had throughout the day, it's something I've been having throughout the last few hours on social media. You know, what that sort of big question, what would you rank out of 10 the way Everton have acted or conducted themselves in the transfer window in regards to what felt inevitable that we'd lose one of our main players, i.e. Richarlison, Calvert-Lewin, or some might say Gordon now, given the saga that's gone on with him in the last few weeks and a potential move to Chelsea, which thankfully, most people would say thankfully, isn't going to happen because he's been really, really good and important for us in our last two away games where we've come away with a point in each of them. That's something we want everyone to get involved with tonight. Write in the comments on the YouTube or Twitter, whatever it is you follow us. Let us know your thoughts on what you think the summer has done for us, the transfer window's done. Let's hope we're celebrating it in an hour or so about something that we pull out of the hat in the last hour. But to me, I just think that these days, which certainly aren't my favourite whatsoever, and you know, I know a lot of people sort of consume themselves and what they do to make deadline day an event. You know, you only have to look at what Jim White, he probably made it himself, didn't he? And he's probably still proud of it till this very day, of how the transfer window went about, and it was made by the Yellow Tie Day by BBC. The way Sky have acted and conducted themselves.
Slating your own employees is never a good move, really.
Absolutely.
You can't get away with that one alive, either.
Being conducted really well, if you have watched the BBC or listened to the BBC content today, I must say that. But I still, the Blue Room's still my bread and butter, the dual bread and butter, despite the fact we work for pretty established companies and we'd like to think it's the best, even though we work somewhere else, don't we, Matt? But Everton themselves, I think the most responses I've said, I've tried it not to be negative because I think there's two ways of looking at it. The players we've actually signed, I think, have been really good. I think, you know, of Onana, I think of the defenders we've signed, Cody, Tarkowski, they're moves that are very positive, I think. I think they've shown that Everton is trying to improve themselves because they've, look, let's face it, have had to, given the fact we very, very nearly went down to the second division back in March, April. No, it was May. But, no, was it June by then, wasn't it? It was only like 2 and a bit months ago. It feels like it's feels so historic that we very nearly went down, as do the 98 and back in 94 and stuff like that. But those signings that we have made, I think, have been good. I think we've seen, particularly against Leeds the other night, that they've started to grow together. They've started to look like a team. I think we could have well won that game had Nathan Patterson scored what looked like a really comfortable, easy chance for a player that has looked brilliant for us at right back. That's another plus point because we needed to sort that out, given that Seamus looks like he's in the sort of twilight zone of his professional career as a player. But you know, you come to a day like this, you come to the point like we are now, less than an hour left on transfer deadline day in summer 2022, and we still desperately need, I think most people would say more than this, but at least another centre forward. And that just hasn't, or doesn't look like it's happening right now. It seems like we've been linked with a handful of different ones, but it hasn't come to fruition. And I mean, I personally, if this stays as it is now and James Garner's moved to us from Manchester United is confirmed and that's all that happens. I think you mentioned it earlier today, Matt, that it looked like that was all that was going to happen today, realistically. If that's it, then I think that a lot of good hard work on who we have brought in has been let down by not completing it, not getting to the end of it, thinking, do you know what? Everton look a lot better and much more comfortable. And look, I'm going to admit that the fact that we've all played five games in the Premier League, haven't won one yet and conceded in every one of them, you know, each of those make you feel a little bit, you know, a little bit more nervous towards what we don't have yet. And that is a out-and-out striker. I think Calvert-Lewin's hopefully going to be back as soon as possible. And Mopai is going to be a better goal scorer than what he was at Brighton. He's not that type of goal scorer. I mean, we've discussed it a lot since we signed him earlier in the week. And everyone was so, so pissed off that he couldn't play against Leeds, given the fact that it was Bank Holiday Monday. But yeah, that's where I'm at the moment. Right now, I think that really good players we've signed, but we haven't completed the task. I think it feels to me like, you know, when you've done your GCSEs in school, and you've done, like, I don't know, 70-odd% of it and felt really confident about the exam that you've done, then the last couple of pages, you've ran out of time to actually complete it. That's exactly what this feels like to me right now.
Yeah, I quite like that as an analogy. We have got people coming into the chat now. It's going to be a bit mad. It's going to be those different people getting involved throughout the course of the next hour and a half or so.
And we need to remind everyone, Matt, keep giving us your comments, thoughts, questions.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's going to keep us going. Joining us now, Adam Sutton. Adam, how are you, mate? On this deadline day evening, you feeling happy, sad, glad it's all over nearly?
The latter, definitely. I think in terms of that window as a whole,
sounds a bit mad, mate. We'll come back to you in a sec. Try and get that sorted. But we'll throw over to the man who's going to be hosting this mainly tonight as well. I'm going to sort of be producing and trying to get people in and out of the chat, and I mean, hopefully handling the technical things, which you've done absolutely terribly so far tonight. we've got Rob Vera here, the transfer guru himself. Rob, how do you feel?
God, don't ever call
this
me.
Feels to me like, I imagine it's like what Scott Hansen feels like on the first night of Red Zone every year, when it's like you are just in your element.
Yeah, except for like 7 hours of commercial free football, it's just been the last 7 days in particular of just unending staring at my tweet deck scrolls and all of that. But yeah, I'm so, my favorite thing about today is when it's over, because I will sleep better tonight than I've slept the last few days, because my brain gets so attached to this thing that I find myself kind of randomly waking up, checking my phone, checking to see if anything has happened 6 hours ahead of me. And so I'm a junkie. It's a terrible addiction to this mad, absurd theater that is the transfer window, Matt. But regardless of how it turns out, there's always something to talk about. That'll certainly be the case today. Hopefully Adam will get an actual microphone working instead of speaking into a speakerphone that's set up in the room across the hall or whatever he's got going on right now. Adam, hopefully get your camera back, buddy, because you've been brought on here for your good looks more than anything else. I just want you to know that. There we go.
There we go.
Hang on. What are you trying to say here, Rob? Because I'm not in vision, am I? So, you know.
Dave, you never come on camera anymore, buddy. That's your choice.
There's a good reason for that, but you don't have to rub it in by whatever.
You know, I won't hear it. But anyway.
Rubbing Adam's ego. You know, you don't have to do that.
Adam knows he's handsome, so it's not like I need to be the one to tell him. So, well, look, we're going to be on here for, as Matt said, I'm going to try and take the helm of this thing for the next hour or so, hour plus. We'll stay on for a bit. Matt, if you will kind of interject every once in a while, let me know about what people in the chat are saying. I'm staring at Zoom and not at YouTube right now. I'll kind of kick off my initial thoughts on this thing. We do have 51 minutes left. I don't know that I am expecting any sort of Alex Iwobi at the death miracle that we had years back that I recall us all being very disappointed about at the time. And of course, we feel very differently about Alex Iwobi now, but we certainly couldn't have known that back then. It looks like we're not going to sign anyone else today. We're waiting on the Garner announcement, as Dave and Matt were talking about. Barring any weird snafus, by all accounts, that is done. So Everton on deadline day will have completed bringing in two more central midfielders. I think that if we go under the assumption that Everton are not going to bring in another attacking player, I think that we all kind of have to class this overall window as being pretty disappointing. Well, I think it's pretty disappointing. I shouldn't speak for all of us, and I shouldn't say that we should all feel that way, but that is how I feel. To Dave's point before, I mean, I think that there's been a lot of decent work that's been done that is sort of let down by the conclusion to this window. And as much as the angst that you're hearing from many of us on Twitter and probably in the chat today in relation to not signing a striker on deadline day almost sounds very like cliche in terms of wanting some signing at the last minute to really pump us up, this is really been coming for a while. This has been a long-term abject failure by this, and let's go ahead and say Kevin Thelwell, the board, whoever you want to name, to not replace Richarlison with any sort of what anyone could class as a replacement level acquisition that's worthy of Richarlison. Now, I think that means a lot of different things to a lot of different people, but I do think that when you look at the overall business that Everton have done this season, they've made one marquee signing and they've signed a bunch of, for lack of a better term, journeymen, guys who've been playing in the league for a while, guys that are coming in on frees or on very low transfer fees. Guys like Dwight McNeil, who if you wanted to squint and say, well, there's your Richarlison replacement, a guy who scored zero goals and had one assist last season, who I view as a reclamation project, who could very well bounce back. But no one can look, you can't really look at anyone with a straight face and say, well, Dwight McNeil, that's clearly your Richarlison replacement. I know some will say, well, if you start adding up the goals between Neil Mope and what Gordon's going to score this season, and you start to hear people really stretching for a justification. Amadou Onana is the only real high quality, what you would refer to as kind of no-brainer foundational piece that Everton have acquired this summer. And so the work feels very incomplete. This side is going to have a more consistent back four or five. I think that in terms of just guys who are probably going to stay fit, I think that's great. The midfield is absolutely better, but the attack is worse. And we didn't score many goals last season. That was a problem. And the league around us, as Matt has noted many times, has just gotten better and better. And now we are staring at another season of, I don't feel like we'll be embarrassed as often. I think that we will probably get by on turning losses into draws, as we've already seen early in the season. But we're going to have trouble scoring goals on a consistent basis by the looks of it. Now, if we are the club of if Dominic Calvert-Lewin comes back and is this injury was really a relatively minor blip and not a reoccurrence of the same long-term problems from last season. If Neil Mope can chip in with about the same level of goals that he's been scoring in the past, if Anthony Gordon can, he scored two goals, and I have already heard people say, well, look, he's on his way to scoring double digit. I mean, he might be, but let's wait and see on that. If a lot of things happen, Everton could be the same or marginally better scoring. And boy, that is not exactly the inspirational, go to war sort of message that I wanted to have going into the remainder of this season. And so I think that we're now in a place where we have to ask ourselves some pretty tough questions about Kevin Thelwell, about the, I said that we can't judge him until the end of this window. Well, we're just about there. Farhad Mashiri and the board released a very highly publicized letter that said, judge us at the end of the window. And so all of those things where we now have reached the judgment day itself, are weighing pretty heavily. I'm kind of in the mode right now of viewing this window. If no striker comes in the next 45 minutes, as being about a five out of 10, that's kind of where I'm at. Adam, I think we've got you back now. I feel so. Like I'm painting a kind of a doomy gloomy picture here, buddy, but it's a bit of a letdown, isn't it, when you sell your most important attacking high pedigree player and you don't really seem in any way, shape, or form to make an attempt to replace him with someone of either similar quality or someone of raw ability that could have potentially reach the level of quality of someone like Richarlison, who admittedly is probably still not the finished product himself, but that's kind of what we're staring at right now. Adam, I'm going to start with you. I want your basic thoughts on the window, and I want to kick off with a question as well. Frank Lampard is going to get some support and has been getting some support. Is he good enough of a manager to overcome a lack of certain resources in the squad that he and probably others thought that he would have?
I think in terms of Lampard specifically, he has been given a number of signings that I imagine he's asked for, specifically in terms of not just a couple of replacements. I think he's tried to actually build his own squad in one window here. And the comparison you can make really is Palace last season, where they had a very old squad that was out of form, a squad that was struggling in the Premier League. Patrick Vieira comes in and basically makes 5, 6, 7 signings, which on paper may not have looked like it's going to take them to the next level. But at the same time, he's building a squad that is going to be well implemented into his system, his way of playing and his vision. And while I agree with most of the points that the lads have said, and you've said yourself, Rob, around missing maybe that one bit of real quality that could not just excite Evertonians, but really put us in good stead to finish a lot better than we did last year, I'm also really optimistic with the business we have done in terms of the players that we've brought in, the profile that we've brought in, the players that we've got rid of, whether it's end of contract or somehow got them out the door. Of course, Richarlison's the exception to that rule. But at the same time, we are still missing one or two. And of course, Richarlison's replacement is one of those. However, I just think that Frank Lampard might be looking at this saying, I've got, and I love Dave's analogy before, actually, I've got 80, 90% of what I asked for here. If this is the plan, and if this is the longevity that the Everton board are backing him with, then it's not going to be an overnight success. It's not going to be turning Everton from a relegation battling side with an aging squad, with a really poor squad, actually, not just from a a technical point of view, but from a mentality point of view, losing games and not being able to turn themselves around. So I think going back to your initial question, Rob, it's more about I'm happy with Everton's window. I could be happier, but I can see the vision, which is something we haven't been able to say for a long, long time. You look at Idrissa Gueye, you look at James Tarkowski, Connor Cody, that's a profile of experience, a little bit of narc, a little bit of nous, but we're starting to bring in these young lads, the young and hungry, the profile that we've all spoken about before, the likes of Onana, the likes of Dwight McNeil, the likes of James Garner, and people who are actually going to be playing for Everton for a long period of time, but also they're going to be playing into Frank Lampard's style and his vision, really. So all in all, I'm really happy, actually. And as long as Dominic Calvert-Lewin can come back, score goals, I think Neil Mopay could be a really shrewd signing in support of Dominic Calvert-Lewin. Then who's to say Everton can't have a good season? Because if you name a starting 11 of the players we've signed and the players we've got, we're definitely in a better position than we were last year.
Yeah, just very quickly to jump in there, Everton have confirmed the signing of James Garner from Manchester United. He is through the door. Interesting to see what he has to say and all that. We'll go through that. But we've had a lot of comments as well. Cheers to everyone who's dropping them. Ian Burgess has said, Gordon and Gray will be massively better than last season. We have a backup striker now. It's not all doom and gloom. CJEFC for life said, shame about Kudos not happening. It's Man United's fault for signing Anthony, I'm assuming. Ian Burgess said, wow, Rob, cheer up, mate. Step back and look at the whole picture. I'm assuming that's what his voice sounds like. It said, Tarkowski, Cody, Patterson all improve on last season's defence. And Arne Iwobi and Gay is massively better than Alan and Decore. And Matthew Follis said, I think the World Cup would help us. Calvert-Lewin has 8 games and then a 2-month break. But yeah, Rob, cheer up, mate. Come on.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we all know that amongst us that I'm the negative one, clearly. So the irony of all of this now is that I've been the one who's been saying we've got to reserve judge. And I meant what I said, and I don't really back off of that. I think you have to wait until the end of this window to kind of judge the total picture. I think that, Adam, you make a lot of good points, and I do want to get on to talk about James Garner a little bit. And obviously, you know, Matt, if you want to jump in with thoughts, you can. I know you're producing and doing all your technical wizardry right now. But Adam, I think, makes some really good points. I'm not calling this window a complete disaster. I think that in terms of just if you want me to kind of take a glasses half full look at this, and Adam, I think this is somewhat in line with what you're saying too. It's that we brought in a lot more. We didn't bring in a lot of high quality, but we did bring in a lot of very kind of solid, reliable, dependable squad players, which let's be honest. I think that part of what Everton, what really cost Everton over the last few years or last few seasons, but especially last season, was just, you know, they had a couple of top end players and just a lot of really bad depth. They were really, really susceptible to injuries. The jury is still out after 5 games on some of the new additions, certainly, but I definitely think that the improvement defensively is, I mean, everyone points to Tarkowski and Cody. I think that they are both perfectly fine center halves. I think their main strength is their availability, and I think that's going to be really helpful. But I think that part of the strength as well, frankly, and this is part of what makes me someone who wants to give Frank Lampard time, is that he is very willing to develop younger players and play them. And I was a little concerned when we brought Nathan Patterson and in January and he didn't play and then he got injured that, oh, here we go again. But he looks like he's going to be hard to move off of the right back or right wing back position. I think Mikulenko, he struggled a little bit, but overall, I mean, we saw how he came on at the end of last season. I like having young players, young pacier players in those positions. I think it certainly helps the defense overall. You know, Dwight McNeil for what he is, and I'm not down on the Dwight McNeil signing for the money, certainly. I think that he was kind of under the radar really good the other night in terms of his defensive play. I think that he's got to, but now when you don't, but all these things said, and then the midfield, obviously with Iwobi and Onana, already just those two alone, I think Gay will certainly improve it. We'll go on to talk about Garner in a minute, but the midfield is certainly strengthened. So those things are good. That's wonderful. The problem becomes, where do the goals come from? And you're then asking everyone to do a little more than maybe they were expecting to be able to do. You're now asking Dwight McNeil to score more than you probably needed him to score. You are asking Anthony Gordon to develop, you know, very quickly. You are asking Damari Gray, who is probably better suited as a luxury piece off the bench instead of starting lots of games, to now also continue to maintain that form. And so they are now, let's just say you have all of those attacking players that we just talked about, Calvert-Lewin, Neil Mope, Gray, Gordon, achieving at a relatively high level. It takes one injury for that to kind of begin to fall apart a little bit. And so I think that's where my concern is. I just don't know where the goals are coming from. And Adam, I want to turn it to you because I know you wanted to respond there, and then we'll bring Lyndon Lloyd in. Hey, Lyndon, how's it going, buddy? I want to get your thoughts on that, Adam, but also your thoughts on James Garner, who every time I hear his name, I think of, if you're an American, you hear James Garner and you think of one of the coolest, cowboy actors that ever walked the face of the earth, but Maverick himself. But I'm curious as to what you think of the move for James Garner within the context of us missing out on what was such a clear need in terms of adding another attacking goal scoring player, and yet going out and spending double digit money, you know, double digits on a young midfielder that is kind of just, I don't know that I've seen enough to think that Garner's special. He seems kind of like a solid midfielder. I don't know if that was the need right now, but hey, I'd love your thoughts on any of that, Adam.
So I think looking back at talking about where we were last season in terms of quality wise and the likes of Richarlison having to be at the top of his game to really win Everton games. And then you look at Everton now at the end of this transfer window, the averages of our quality of squad, I believe, has improved massively. And we talk about strength and depth and agreed that if one or two get an injury, then we're starting to maybe look a little bit like we did last season. But actually, I saw a graphic yesterday of the Leeds team who started this week and then a team last season in a similar position. And there's been massive changes to Everton's squad. And the back four for one of those, I think none of those players who started last season were playing in this game particularly. And I think that the realistic nature of where we are at the moment is a lot of Evertonians, including ourselves, need to almost get real in a sense of this is a process, a massive process. Everton haven't been a hard to beat, well-oiled machine for probably 5 or 6 years now. And Frank Lampard and Calvin Selwell aren't going to be able to change that in 6-12 months. What we are doing is starting to, as I've said, build a squad here. And the best teams in the league, what they do is they have good players who then are able to perform at a higher level, but they also have good players who can be in and around that squad and fit in as and when they're needed. And with Everton's nature of last year of having 4 or 5 players who were very good, take 2 of them out of the squad and you're very quickly looking at a bang average relegation side, what I hope and what it feels like is that Kevin Selwell and Frank Lampard have started to bring that average up in terms of quality. And who's to say in January and in the following summer, that's when you start to take your 1 or your 2 players from, you know, further afield or go and get your diamonds in the rough and bring in real quality, because what Everton are doing now is wholesale changes to bring in 5, 6, 7, 8 players to make their team better. But then moving forward, that's when you get those drops of quality in. And prime example, as much as we hate to say it, at Liverpool, they don't rush. They don't panic buy. They don't sign players because they feel like they need to do it. They sign players in a way that they know are going to improve their team. And that's what Everton need to do from now, because we've done it too many times where we panic buy, we get a player in, we spend stupid money, we give him a stupid contract, he doesn't perform, and then we're back to square one trying to get him off the books. Everton now are making crude signings on better contracts, younger profiles, or if it's not a younger profile, it's them about having to perform to earn the keep. And yeah. I think James Garner, to move on to him, is probably one of those. It's kind of low risk and it's high reward, because if James Garner can come in and kick on and really ignite his career as a young, hungry footballer, then Everton are going to get a really good player on the hands. But if not, he's still going to be at a position where he's young enough and he's got a decent enough reputation that you can move him on and recoup a little bit of fun. So, listen, I totally agree with you, Rob, and it's always nice as Evertonians to sit here on deadline day and you're chasing Marouane Fellaini around the hotel, or you've got someone random that's going to come in we've never heard of who is definitely going to be the answer. But at the same time, I believe that Everton are in a much better position here. Of course, there's a number of caveats with injuries, with keeping players who are going to be needed to be scoring goals, to score goals. Anthony Gordon's kicked on in the past couple of weeks. I think Damari Gray's had a decent start to the season. And if you get Dominic Calvert-Lewin and Neil Mopay scoring 10 goals each, then Everton can fire themselves up the table. However, I do agree in the way that we just want a little bit of something to scream and shout about, but this is a long process and it's not going to be changed overnight at Everton Football Club, and Evertonians need to be a little bit patient because it is a work in progress.
Well, 10 goals each, I could live with that. With that, I bring on the con side of this argument, I think, Lyndon Lloyd. Who I think I'm kidding. Adam made really good points. Lyndon, I feel like you and I, at least just based on what I saw online, shared some kind of similar disappointment with the lack of attacking reinforcement that has not been addressed, that we kept waiting to be addressed, and we waited till today to be addressed, and it just doesn't look like it's going to be. Your thoughts on maybe not just today, but the window as a whole, as we come to the end of the window, how much of your assessment of this window is based on the inability for Everton to get in that last player?
I don't think you can ignore it because it's such an important piece. Like you, as someone who really enjoys the theater of it all, and having lived through some, you know, pretty exciting deadline days in the past, you kind of want them to pull something out of the hat right at the end and, you know, put a nice bow on the whole thing. So I'm disappointed. And I think particularly, as everyone has said, the recruitment to this point has been pretty effective. You know, I think we've addressed some key areas of the team. We're stronger, I think, on balance everywhere apart from in attack, and that hopefully won't come back to bite us. I think you know, Dave, Rob, Adam, you've all summed it up pretty well. Just on James Garner, I think you kind of take him out of the deadline day scramble a little bit. I think he's one of those players that we saw an opportunity to grab, a fairly highly rated young player for what lots of people who know a lot more about it than I do seem to think is a bit of a steal. Based on his performances for Forest and how he was regarded. I think one of the Manchester United players was asked a couple of years ago, which was one of the players that they were really excited about from their youth setup, and James Garner was the one. So, you know, I think he's one for the future, but even if he plays this season, you might find he's more effective than Andre Gomez. In which case, job done, you know.
Yeah.
But I think having had what's been a fairly tough start to the season, and in many ways quite a concerning one, given, you know, our lack of goals and also how teams around us feel, maybe Bournemouth aside, a lot more potent this season, a bit stronger. I think that in many ways, for that reason, we were hanging our hat on us getting at least one more attacking player in, particularly going into these next two games. You just kind of wanted something, like an injection of something that just the fans could get excited about, but also the team could feel like, okay, we've got someone up front who can actually get us something, you know, when we really need it. And that's my concern. I think Neil Maupay will definitely help. But I think, you know, many of us feel that he alone won't be enough. So you're really putting a lot of hope and faith in Dominic Calvert-Lewin coming back in the next week or so and then staying fit for the majority of the season. Or at least until, you know, mid-January. And that was last season's plan, and it almost blew up in our face in the worst way. So that's what I can't escape that. And I feel like we're going into the next few weeks feeling up against it, feeling as though it's going to be a real struggle like most of last season was. And that's could have been avoided if we'd just be able to find something in this last couple of days. I understand it's one of the hardest parts of the pitch to address. I was listening to Fabrizio Romano's thing on Twitch earlier, and he was talking to a Sampdoria fan, and he was saying, "Oh yeah, I'm hoping for some news. We're looking for a striker." Like, everyone's looking for a striker. So I feel like it's something that I'm glad we didn't panic into giving Blackburn ridiculous amounts of money for a player who's going to be free in a few months' time. I think that was wise. But yeah, you just hope that they'd be able to find something else, and they haven't.
Yeah. Matt, I think you had some reader comments coming in, but Lyndon, no, I agree. I think we are, and we can discuss this more. Certainly, I think people will be torn a little bit between, do you spend a little extra to address and maybe overspend slightly to bring that player in because you're worried about what the impact is ultimately going to be on a season and getting into a relegation fight again, or this is the thing we've been screaming for, is that we want them to make more responsible decisions. But I guess I keep just coming back to the fact that we sold our most important attacking player and really haven't done much to address some of that. Matt, you've got some comments from the gallery.
Yeah, we've had, so it's quickly rattling through some of them. Uncle Superfly said, "I wouldn't have minded lack of forward purchases if we kept Sims in the squad." Martin Clark said, "Do you not think Townsend coming back shortly takes away the need for a further winger slash forward, given the fact he chipped in with a few years fit last season?"
How far away is Townsend? Do we know?
I think it's New Year. I think we're probably looking at New Year, I reckon.
Yeah.
And Matt McGraw said, "Surely without the Phantom Gordon money, a major late spree was always doubtful. Marquee money gets marquee players. I think the well ran dry. Not the worst window, but for me, we are one striker short." Robert, Alan Fahili's just joined the call as well. I was hoping he was going to come on around about this time when we were just sealing a move for Samuel Chukwueze from Villarreal, and you could tell us all about how great this lad's going to be and how he's going to tear it up for us. But it doesn't look like it's going to happen, does it, Alan?
No, it seems to be dead in the water, to be fair. I think we can argue whether we're suited for the rest of the season or not, but the fact of the matter is that they were trying until the last for Brereton Diaz and also for somebody like Chukwueze, a wide forward. So evidently, in a perfect world, they would have brought in somebody in of both profiles and didn't. So that's just the fact of life that they live with, basically, you know. But I think overall, the window was fairly positive. I think we brought in, you know, good characters, good leaders like Tarkovsky, like Cody, Onana, Gay, I think, is a huge signing. I really think he could transform a midfield and really can change the face of the team. But obviously, in an ideal world, we would brought in somebody with a bit more attacking weight, because I think you're right. Like, we can't rely purely on Mopai and Calvert-Lewin for the rest of the season. So mixed feelings. I mean, the beginning of the season for me has been very, very nerve-wracking. I feel like we're going to have to fight for every single point that we have available to us. But I think that we're definitely stronger ending the window than when we began it, because I think that we always knew Richarlison was going to leave. But so while we could have replaced him, I wish we did. I think that we're in decent place generally. I think that the strength in the spine of the team in centre defence and centre midfield is better than what it was before we began the window. Obviously, the striker situation is not ideal, but it's what we have to shake our hands with and deal with, basically, you know.
Alan, what have you made of... I'm curious, because I think that the way everyone views these first five games, like I was saying to Matt the other night on our final transfer pod before today, that I thought that the way in which a lot of us would look at these first five games, frustrating as they may be, that we've gotten, three draws out of at this point, we have no wins, but depending on, it's one of those things where if you look at the games themselves, or if you look at just the points output, the table, and you don't know anything about how we played, you'd find it really disconcerting. And yet, I think there are some who would say, if you watch the games, that you can see the striker-sized hole in the attack, that if Everton are playing, even with Neil Mope for one of those games, that we might be looking at different results. Maybe we feel very differently about all of this. I am someone who has viewed the biggest improvement, and I think that defensively we've been, I think we were kind of fortunate to escape conceding three or four goals to Brentford, to be honest. But I think we've been okay defensively. But I think the biggest improvement to me is clearly in midfield. And in midfield, that's where we spent money on the biggest player that we acquired this summer in Onana. And I think that it's not a coincidence that he and Iwobi look better. But what do you make of these first few games in terms of the prognosis for Everton moving forward? Do you look at it as, well, if Calvert-Lewin or Mope, but hopefully Calvert-Lewin comes back in and is playing alongside Gordon and one of either Gray or McNeil, or maybe even Mope. I don't know if they're going to play two strikers. Do you see that making that much of a difference? Or are there still things that are big underlying concerns for you based on what you've seen so far that you don't even think a striker insertion is necessarily going to address?
Well, I think it's kind of a two-pronged start to the season for me. I think that the positive side of things is the character. I think that the players are exhibiting a team spirit that we haven't seen for several years. I think it was evidenced against Leeds when, you know, Gordon and I think it was Tom Davies were getting into a bit of a scrap and Conor Cody and Tarkowski sprinted the length of the pitch to get involved. And like, personally, I think that's a base requirement for any Everton team. Like, you know, it goes back to the dogs of war mentality. I think it's a really important attribute that Evertonians love, and it helps Evertonians connect with the team, and it helps the team be competitive, because I think Evertonians will accept a lack of quality and a lack of kind of, you know, ingenuity, but will never accept a lack of effort. And I think that if a player and a group of players are working together, if they have each other's backs, if they're fighting for every ball, playing with a bit of, you know, aggression, a bit of spice to the game, I think it makes a huge difference. But that's coupled with a lack of, in my opinion, tactical cohesion, a lack of a clear idea, and a lack of quality. And that's really dangerous, to be honest with you, because I don't like the three at the back system personally, but at the same time, I'm not sure about Lampard switching from a three to a four so quickly, you know, after four games of a season. It screams to me that he doesn't know what his best system is. He doesn't know how to structure a team properly. I don't see the same patterns of play that I see in Leeds United, that I see in Brighton, that I see in Brentford. And these are Leeds, Brighton and Brentford. These are clubs that we have been aeons above in the last 15 to 20 years, my entire time supporting Everton. I'm genuinely looking at these clubs, these teams, and envying them the way I used to envy the top teams in the country. And that's a massive concern. And I think that Frank Lampard, I really like him as a person. I genuinely believe he's working very hard. He's trying his best to get the team working together in the best way possible. But I think that his tactical failings are evident in the team. And for that reason, I'm worried about the season greatly, to be honest with you, because no longer do we have the quality where it's kind of a situation of, okay, we're underperforming, we're below par. But if the players can sing from the same hymn sheet and perform the way we know we can, we'll be fine. At this rate, even if these players are performing at the limit of their ability, they're still not capable of, you know, a top half European finish, because the quality of the kind of middle pack in the Premier League is so high these days that there's no easy games. So when I look at the fixture list, every single fixture gives me fear in some way. I can find some way of looking at a fixture negatively, genuinely, like, and it's given me anxiety. And I'm arguing with my dad about this over the last few weeks, where I'm kind of saying, you know, like, we're losing points against Nottingham Forest at home. Where are the points going to come from? We lost to Aston Villa, probably one of the crisis teams of the season so far. Like, where are these points coming from? There's not 25 teams in this league. There's 20. And all 20, practically, aside from Bournemouth, are very capable on their day. And I just don't think we have the quality to see out games and win games that we should normally be winning. So I'm worried, to be honest with you, given what's happened so far.
Well, Alan, I recall that you were pretty excited about us moving to a three-man midfield, buddy. So I'm going to hold you to that. I hear you on that. And Dave, I want to bring you back around on this too. But, you know, on the one hand, it's like he's been going with five at the back. And what I've not been able to figure out is, was that a reaction essentially to not having Gay and, you know, I guess now we can look at Gay, Garner, and others that have now been brought in, but feeling like that was the best option that he had, the second part of that, I guess, being do we fault him for moving too quickly away from five, from, you know, the five at the back, or would we conversely be upset if he was not responsive enough and waited too long to move to a three man?
I just say before Dave answers that, like, I'm not upset about the three man midfield. I like that. That's okay. I want everyone to play 4-3-3. That's the best option for them, in my opinion. But I think that the fact that he changed so quickly in the season hints to me that he doesn't know what his best system is. He's not sure what the best system to play is. So I hope it was a precursor to Gana coming in, but I'm not sure.
Right.
Guante, look away.
That's what I'm hoping for sure. Dave, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think Alan's spot on there. I don't think he fully trusts his own convictions at times. Lampard, and look, I think that happens when you're a relatively new manager. It should happen, I think, because he's got the right people around him. I think Paul Clement, I've been a big fan of Paul Clement for a long, long time. I know when he went into management on his own, he didn't do so well, but as a coach, he was alongside Ancelotti for so long, and Alan know a lot more about that than me. But your first point there about when he's gone with five at the back, I think his initial thought, the first thing that's in his head is that we lack a certain quality or a certain substance in front of the five that make it the go-to decision for him. And I think as well, when we've got Cody in, and I seem pretty fixated on Cody these days, and hopefully we'll be having a chat to him soon on the Blue Room. But in general, when we got him in, I think many Wolves fans, would tell you it's no secret for many of their fans, to suggest that the reason they were happy for him to go, or the reason why he was allowed to leave, was because they wanted to shift from having a three central defenders at the back. And that's what he's mainly been so successful with in his career. You can see that with England as well. If you watch England a lot, Gareth Southgate likes to throw him in the middle of a back three, including Tarkowski as well, by the way. That's an important thing, I think, to keep in everybody's mind, that these are international defenders that we brought in, which by and large should say that is a really decent part of the transfer window. The obvious thing is there for us all to see as we wait. We've got 20-odd minutes left that we can potentially get a striker. It doesn't look like it's going to happen now, but that's the missing piece of the jigsaw. We all know that, and we'll go into a lot more deeper detail about that. But then when you've seen against Leeds, I was absolutely delighted for Conor Cody's performance at Elland Road. That's a tough place to go to in this league. They had a really good start to the season. They battered Chelsea 3-0. It's a powerful place to go to. Make no mistake about it. It's the type of cauldron that I think Liverpool would like to refer themselves as, but they're actually not. It's how we, I think, started to become as everybody started to get together when we needed those must-win three-point games to keep us in the Premier League towards the end of last season. And it just seems to be like straight off a duck's shoulder. He's happy to be involved in that. And to do that while he's in a flat back four, who I think, just as a bit of a side note, I think Mikalenko really struggled the other night. That's just my personal opinion. I thought Patterson was great. But the two central defenders, Tarkowski and Cody, made themselves our priority first two centre backs. And seeing Cody perform like that, I think for many people who had this fixated in their minds for a long time that he was only ever going to be good in a back five, I think that completely, and I put the tweet out there, it completely put it to bed that he can't play in a flat back four. He can't keep playing offside positions. He can't make people offside. All of that stuff, I think he's completely put it to bed. And that, I think that's a real credit to him, because he's come in, and I think the reputation he's had, obviously many people would say, oh, you know, he's a cop-out, so I don't like him, I don't trust him, whatever. I think you need to quickly get that out of your mind, because it's a bit immature anyway to think that about a professional who is a professional in every sense of the word. You hear him speak, you hear him lead, you see him with the captain's armband for so much of his career. I think that's one of our, if not best, signing in this window, getting him in, because I think I think he'll go a long way to keeping us a lot of clean sheets I know we haven't had one yet, despite the fact he's played in all of them, but he will be largely responsible when Everton start getting clean sheets this season, in my opinion. So I don't have a problem with them playing in a four. In fact, I hope that's an encouragement from seeing what happened at Leeds for Lampard. I think that's what I'm going to now as my go-to start-up. It's going to be a back four. Cody, Tarkowski, Mikhailenko, and I know he hasn't had the best of starts, certainly in Brentford and Leeds, and Patterson, who's, I think he's going to be a superstar, that young lad at right back. I think there is your natural back four. And then I think, like, just to go back to what Alan referred to, going 3-3 is exactly what we want to see, exactly what we need. The only thing that we're missing is the elephant in the room, not having the front three that you particularly want. And that's been seen in what we've watched so far this season, not having a striker, not having a finisher, not having someone we can cross the ball into, which is, to extend that, the reason why we bought someone like Dwight McNeil to cross the ball. He's not been able to cross it to anyone, so I sort of feel sorry for him. But that shows you why there's been so much issues and blame thrown towards recruitment and the board. And I say recruitment in a wide way, because I don't think it's Thelwell's fault whatsoever. This has been due to what's happened previous to him.
Do you know, just want to quickly jump in there, just onto something that Alan was saying, and in regards to the quality of the league going up. And I had that feeling watching the game between Wolves and Newcastle on Sunday. And in that game, it wasn't an amazing game, but you saw Ruben Neves bang one in from 30 yards. And then you saw Alan Saint-Maximin volley a ball out the sky into the bottom corner in the last minute to get Newcastle a point.
You see Isaac sort of looked at him and thought,
Isaac as well. I sort of looked at him and thought, those two sides could finish bottom half. Like, genuinely, yeah. Both of those teams could finish in the bottom half of the table. You know, people were talking earlier this season about Wolves and how they feel like they're going to struggle. You sign players like Nunes, they've obviously got Guedes in there as well, and there's obviously a lot of work for them to do still, but it feels like every team up and down the league, you know, has got a player of that quality that can do, or at least one player of that quality that can do something like that, where they just create a moment out of nothing in the final third and they can score a goal. And I'm not entirely sure we have. You know, Anthony Gordon's an excellent young player with a lot of potential. Dominic Calvert-Lewin is a fine centre-forward who, when you give him the service, he'll score goals. But to do something like that, to create something out of nothing, to really show that little bit of magic, it feels probably about 15, 16 teams in the league have got that player now. And I don't know if we have. And that's, you know, me and you have been speaking, Rob, the last few weeks about what we want Everton to do and what we think they're short. And that's why I sort of feel like we are one high-class forward down, I think, in that sense. And you look at someone like Richarlison, and maybe he wouldn't volley the ball in from 30 yards or, you know, do something mad like that, but he had that ability to conjure something out of nothing in the penalty area or just run onto a pass and finish nicely. And I just don't look at that. That's how we've got at the moment, and I think we've got it. But I'll just quickly rattle through some questions we've had and pass on to Mick Greenall, who's joined us as well. Matt McGrath said Mikhailenko's been fine. I don't get Dave's recent issues with him. Dave, you can come back to that later. We've got Andrew Alice saying more concerned about the lack of another striker until January. Not too concerned about switching between four and five, depending on who we're playing. And Anders Condrup has said, I think the staff know fairly well what they're doing. Five at the back was a clear choice because of no quality midfielders. Regarding the goals, I think we'll be much better off because of this. Mick Greenall, how are you, mate?
Yeah, not too bad. Completely lost track of time, to be honest. I thought it was still like 9:30, but I still thought there was some sort of glimmer of hope that we might sign someone. But I didn't realise the deadline was in like 8 minutes.
Yeah. Hey, Mick, I actually want to ask you a question to tee you off a little bit here. You made a comment that I made note of on Twitter, probably week and a half ago, maybe 2 weeks ago. I think it was in the midst of not just you, but most of us thinking that Anthony Gordon was going to go to Chelsea. I think it was before we knew that the offer from Chelsea wasn't quite what it was hyped up to be. And I don't think fundamentally you're going to hear a lot of people complain tonight. And I don't think anyone said it, that they're upset that Gordon is still at Everton given that offer. But you made the comment, and I think that a lot of people feel the same way. And I do have my concerns about it, that if Anthony Gordon stays, the as we've seen in the past, hell, we have a song about a £50 million player that we didn't actually pay £50 million for. The truth of the fee or the truth of the alleged offer or whatever doesn't matter so much as the perception. Anthony Gordon now is going to be at Everton and expected now, especially because we have not signed an additional attacking player to supply additional goals. Now he's got to kind of play up to this hype. I imagine a new contract is certainly on the way too. That feels, and I don't know how you feel about this, and I say this because I want to be as, I don't want to be disingenuous. I don't know that I still class Gordon as someone who's going to be a superstar, but now he's going to have to really up his game and continue what he's been doing in terms of scoring goals. I want to hear your overall thoughts on the window, but I want you to, if you don't mind, start with what you think, how you think all of this impacts Anthony Gordon moving forward.
Well, I think that the tweet that you were getting at was, and this was before Brentford, I think it was I think there was a rumor at the time that Everton rejected 60 million. I don't think that was, from what I gathered, ever turned out to be true. But I think I said specifically that it was counterproductive for Everton to keep Anthony Gordon now. I think just based on it offline, I think people had watched the first, I think it must have been three games at that point, and it was very clear that Everton still needed additions in attacking areas, and all of a sudden you've got a club offering a sizable amount of money that gives Everton the opportunity to go buy players and solve those issues straight away. And I think Gordon almost became, I don't know, he became an opportunity for Everton and for Everton fans for optimism, really, from the season to go out and buy, you know, shiny new players. And I thought the fact that, especially when £60 million was being touted, if he stayed, fans are. And I think, and I don't know if they will, but my expectation is fans will expect Gordon now to play this season. Like someone who is a £60 million player. And I think realistically, you know, coming into this window, for me, Everton should have been bringing in players, you know, irrespective to what happened to Richarlison and Calvert-Lewin, bringing in players with the idea in mind that Anthony Gordon's still very much a project and shouldn't be allowed to start 38 games this season. As it happens, up until Christmas, he will be relied to start pretty much every game and be a very important cog in this team. And to be fair to him, since that tweet, he's scored two in two games. And metrics-wise, you know I love my data, Rob. he's looked very promising. And, you know, I think it's... Gordon's still a young player, and I think it was very easy to get caught in the idea that Chelsea were bidding 45, 50 million for a player who only scored four goals and got two assists last season. But there's no reason to say that he can't make another jump this year and double, if not add more to those contributions. And if he does, effectively, there's your Richarlison replacement. I'll just put that out there.
Yeah, in terms of God. Bloody hell, mate.
In terms of, you know, Anthony Gordon's like a new signing, I'll go with that.
Do you not think though, I think you made an excellent point there. Do you not think that there's the absolute weight on his shoulders now insurmountable for him? I know he's a world class looking talent, but he remains a talent. I know people can sit here and say, and people will no doubt in their comments tell us how good that lad is going to be. I don't have any doubts about that. I've started even to look at him, particularly with these last couple of games, the way we started to look at Rooney when we were hearing from him before he'd even kicked the ball for the first team, and seeing photos of him scoring all over parks around Liverpool, scoring all sorts of goals from ridiculous
angles. Rooney.
all of that. I'm starting to get a feeling like that towards Anthony Gordon from seeing what he was doing. He has some ridiculous skill I think if you're looking outside from a non-Everton perspective, you're looking at him seeing a player that doesn't belong at Everton. And the thing that I'm looking at him seeing is somebody I desperately want him to stay. I've said I wanted him to leave. I wanted him to leave because I think, certainly in recent weeks and certainly since we've seen him at Everton, we've seen him come through and shine in all sorts of things in matches. But I've still sat there, and I don't know if you guys have or not, and thought, there's no way this fella reaches as good as he could possibly be by sticking with us, because we're letting him down. We're not having enough decency around him, enough players to consist with what he can do with the ball, the same as what happened with Rooney. And that's why we saw Rooney go to United, dominating the Premier League and winning ridiculous amounts of titles, Champions Leagues, and becoming England's greatest ever goal scorer. You know, I'm not saying Anthony Gordon is of that level, but I get that feeling towards seeing what he can potentially do. I don't want us to be sat here in 4 or 5 years' time, having not needing to cash in, let's face it, 60 million, whatever it was that was potentially coming our way. I thought that was possibly right now. Sadly, the indictment that we were in was to have to take that because we need that money to go and buy what we need to stay in the league. Now that he's stayed, I'm still looking at him and thinking, so frustrating in my mind that he hasn't got what he needs around him to be the player that keeps us flying in the league, to be the player that we look at consistently every single week saying he's just won us that match. Now he's just meant that we haven't lost in the last couple. That's the potential he's got. But it's a crying shame for him personally. If you're his friend, if you're his family member, whatever, if you're watching him play for Everton, you're absolutely buzzing with what he does. But at some point, someone's going to get to the stage where they think there's not enough around him to make him succeed as much as he should be doing because he's that good. One man can't control an 11-person Premier League game, or very rarely you see it. Those ones especially, you're looking at like some Messi and whatnot. I don't think Gordon's going to be like that. But now, sort of, I know I've just banged on with a load of different things I've just said there, but my question back to you there, Mike, was, you know, you see him now, the amount of pressure that's going to be on that lad to shine every single week because we don't have a natural goal scorer, either fit or a natural scorer in Mopai, in inverted commas, I'm referring to there. He's got such a burden on his shoulders already, I think, having watched him in the last, half a dozen games so far. And it worries me. I don't think that's even a question I'm asking you, but do you understand what I'm saying about the fear I have for him?
Yeah, I think really you've got at exactly what I was trying to get at when I tweeted that it was almost counterproductive for Everton to keep him. I think it's the same for pretty much every, you know, fan base in England. They have a way about them in terms of putting an unbelievable amount of pressure on their own players who've come through the academy. And I think you saw it at times with Barkley, and I think I was at Villa away a couple of weeks back and saw it straight. It was almost there then. You know, Gordon was being bullied by, you know, three or four defenders who were almost twice his size, and we're baffled by the fact that he couldn't, you know, play as a target man against Tyrone Mings. I think English fans in general are guilty of setting impossible objectives sometimes for young players. And I think one of the things with the rumours of Gordon going, I think fans themselves had kind of, and I was guilty of it myself, was you go and spend that money in your head, you know, all these links come out of who Everton could replace Gordon with, and you start thinking the amount of goals and the amount of quality you could add to the side with that money that Gordon was bringing in. And then eventually he stays and that quality is not there. And then straight away, that the pressure's on Gordon to produce that quality all on himself. The only thing I will say, even in just 12 months, and obviously I know I mentioned that maybe Gordon will replace Richarlison's goals and assist himself. I don't think he will. I'm not saying he won't, but I don't think it's massively likely. In the past 12 months, Gordon's developed an unbelievable amount. He's changed massively as a player, and I don't think it's impossible for him to take another step or two this season. And I think if he does, then he can become an important player. But yeah, the pressure will be unbelievable.
Alan, before Alan, before you go, I wanted to ask you just to kind of summarize. You know, Mick brings up a lot of good points, and Dave about kind of the pressure on Anthony Gordon. I was curious. You mentioned before, you know, some of the concerns that you have about the tactical acumen of Frank Lampard, and maybe not having some of those kind of win you a game difference maker types. Who does the pressure, if I think Gordon is probably the easiest answer, but is there anyone else that you feel like has the opportunity now to kind of step up, or maybe even the pressure is kind of piled on as well? I feel like it can't all be on Anthony Gordon, even though I think the narrative is going to make it feel like he stayed. He's you know, this guy who will eventually be worth $60 million or whatever. And he's going to have to score goals. And there's your Richarlison replacement, which I'd like to contend with that mathematical analysis a little bit. But what other opportunities are there in the squad? Who has got to step up? Is it just got to be an outlier like Damari Gray or even Dwight McNeil just having a major bounce back season? Or is it really going to be more of just Everton finding ways to get goal, you know, a few more goals here and there from a few more players to kind of make up that cumulative gap that they've developed at this point?
I'm still reeling from hearing Anthony Gordon compared to Richarlison, Wayne Rooney, and Lionel Messi.
That wasn't me.
No, that was me. What? No,
did Lionel Messi's name thrown in there?
Oh, yeah. don't start putting words in my mouth. What I was simply saying was the level of the feeling. You know what I mean, Alan?
No, only listening.
Cheeky bastard. And he's going as well.
No, but I mean, like, no, I think I genuinely don't think any other player in the squad is capable of stepping up and being that player. I think the only one is Dominic Calvert-Lewin, to be honest with you. Yeah. I think he come back and play the season he did between 20 and 21 when he was this ultimate complete center forward, you know, as quick as anybody, as strong as anybody, able to leap as high as anybody, you know, as good in the air, on the grounds. Like, if that player comes back, it could be a game changer for Everton, because if you have an offense where you've Damari Gray on one side, you've Anthony Gordon on the other, and you've Dominic through the middle, like, that completely revolutionizes the way you approach games and the confidence with which you go into games. It's really, you can't underestimate how important a player like that can be to a team. It can supercharge a team. But outside of Dominic and Anthony, I think it's pretty sparse, because I think Damari Gray is a talented guy. We know that, but I think he's far too streaky to ever be properly relied upon, of course, a whole season. Dwight McNeil, I mean, I'm trying not to be too harsh on the guy, but what I've seen from him so far has been diabolical, in my opinion. I think offensively, he's been so poor. I know his defensive numbers were good against Leeds on Tuesday, but I think from what he's offering in a creative standpoint, even things like measuring passes correctly, being quick on the turn, he's just been really off the pace. So hopefully that improves over the course of the season. And when he's reference point to play against, maybe he might improve. But so far, I've not been encouraged what I've seen from him. The midfield, there's no goals there. Like, none of those players in midfield, even Ghana coming in now, don't contribute goals in the way someone like Tim Cahill would have in the past, for instance. So yeah, I think that it's basically on Gordon and Dominic Calvert-Lewin. The one thing about Gordon, though, is I think that he's arrogant. I think he's really arrogant to a point that almost annoys me, to be honest with you. Like, putting
I quite like that, though, Alan.
I kind of like it.
I do like his game in the last few weeks. I don't know if it's like because of the Chelsea stuff, but
this is it. Yeah, yeah. like putting the ears in his ears. I mean, I don't know. I mean, like, it kind of annoys me a bit, to be honest with you, because, like, I feel like it's kind of like almost having ideas above your station. But I think it could be a good thing, though, to be honest with you, because I think that Gordon has got an interesting mentality. I mean, we know during lockdown, I think he put on, like, what was it, 3 kg in muscle or something. I remember him, he was pictured, you know, hiring a personal trainer, working hard. So he is very, very focused and driven in improving as a footballer. So I think that arrogance, I think the interest from Chelsea and Spurs and Newcastle will have beefed up his ego even more. and we're getting kind of go, okay, this is an opportunity for me to prove that I am a 60 million, 70 million, 80 million euro player. So I think that it could work. And I don't, the reason I'm saying this with the arrogance thing is that I think that the expectation that will be placed upon him now by the Evertonians in the Gladys, in the Park End, won't actually affect him negatively. It will actually affect him positively, because I think that he will look at it as positive pressure upon which you can improve and build. So I think basically, yeah, to kind of, you know, wind down my points, I think our only offensive hopes this season in terms of that being that quality player who can change games against other Premier League teams who are all fighting for the same thing is Dominic and Anthony Gordon, to be honest with you. And I think Gordon is a better bet right now because I still have serious doubts about Dominic's physical condition. So yeah, I think to sum up my answer, which is a bit long-winded, I think that the negative kind of attention that he will receive from both the English press, from social media, and from Evertonians will actually not affect him in a negative way. I think it will help him in his game. So I'm really hopeful that he can be the guy who can kind of carry the team forward offensively this season.
Before Dave compares him to Erling Haaland, I just wanted to say
I wanted to ask Alan a question before he went to the moon, basically, and not about
No. Go for it, Dave. I just had
Andy
to get that.
Gordon, but this might well be along the same lines as comparing them to Lionel Messi and Wayne Rooney. But do you think, and this is obviously for the room and everybody who's making comments on the YouTube line, Alan, start with it. Do you think you could ever see him as an out-and-out striker, Anthony Gordon?
I guess he came through as kind of a second striker, right? Kind of as a force. Yeah. Like, he's obviously quite slight. I think he's better as a winger, to be honest with you. I think in the modern game, the way things are going, it seems to be the false nine movement is kind of past, and that teams are now more focused on having that reference point. I mean, we've seen Isak come into the league, Haaland come into the league, Darwin Nunes come into the league, Gabriel Jesus as well. Like, it is the year right now, it seems, of having that reference point up front. So I think the game is evolving in a way that player like him is, again, better suited to being in the wide areas. I think that with his attributes, his skill set, he's better suited to be in those wide areas than he is through the middle, because I think that holding up the ball and, you know, playing that associative play that you need to do as a false nine isn't particularly getting the best out of his attributes. So I think he could do it, and he's probably the best suited in our squad doing that. I think he's wasted there slightly. I think he's better off on the left wing, where he can go and beat a man, get down the touchline and cause things to happen, you know, and also run into opposition assistant coaches and start fights with them.
The key attribute, isn't it, really? It's what we all want to see. Do you know what? I think we'll wrap the live stream up there, actually, for the night. We have got 10 past 11. Rob, can you believe it? The transfer window's short. We've made it.
Can't wait to go to sleep tonight, buddy. I cannot tell you how much. I cannot.
We are going to
sleep at about 9 o'clock at night, didn't we?
We are going to record a podcast now. So we've got Keith Tomlin and Matt Flusk waiting to join the room as well. Who knows? We'll be on that. That'll be subs weekly over on the Blue Room Extra. But cheers, everybody who tuned in on YouTube tonight for this. Sorry about the initial hiccup at the start with the stream, and sorry if you saw me on my couch accidentally streaming that live. No one really needs to see that at all.
What was going on the couch,
What was that?
What was going on in the couch?
I was just watching the United game, but like I said, I don't think it's the most flattering angle in the world. So
it looked like he was just staring dazed at the computer. It was funny.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just you know, admiring Leicester's capitulation under Brendan Rodgers, wide-eyed. But cheers, everybody.
There's certain other couches other people watch, you see, and he's the internet, so, you know.
Well, I wouldn't know about that, Dave.
I'm sure you wouldn't.
Oh, gosh, we're going to record now. But cheers, everybody who got involved. Cheers, everyone who commented. That has been your deadline day live stream. We are off to record another podcast now. You can find that on the Blue Room Extra, patreon.com/theBlueRoomExtra, if you want to join us there. And we'll speak to you again very soon here on the Blue Room.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office.
More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.